So I have quite a lot to go through, so I'll get started. The scriptural references will be from the NIV, unless otherwise noted. The recipe of love. Colossians 3:14 says, "And over all these virtues, put on love." Put on love? How do you put on love? First Peter 8 says, "Above all, love each other deeply." Also, 1 Corinthians 13:13, that you all know very well. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. And in the very next verse, chapter 14, verse 1, it says, "Follow the way of love." The English Standard Version says, "Pursue love." These scriptures and many others tell us that we must develop love. And all these scriptures speak about agape love. And so we can say that we must desire, pursue, and develop agape love. And our desire would be to progress to perfect agape love. Love is an element of character. And this love, agape love, must be part of our character if we are to be successful in our walk on the narrow way. But how is this attained? We're going to look at that, but first, let's look at the word love. We find in the Greek two primary words for love, agape and philia. And each of these has a noun form and a verb form. This is different than the word love in English, where we use the word love as both a noun and a verb. So let's start with agape love. The Greek word agape is a noun. The verb form is agapao. We are much more familiar with the word agape, but in fact, both agape and agapao are used in scripture quite a lot. Agape, the noun, about 114 times, and agapao, the verb, about 129 times. These words, agape and agapao, carry the meaning of an unconditional love, a love that is doing something for the benefit of someone, whether or not we know them, even if they are an enemy. It is a self-sacrificing love, or sacrificing one's time, energy, and resources for another person's well-being or happiness. It means loving a person despite their flaws, weaknesses, and shortcomings. It is selfless. It doesn't consider one's own interests in the decision to do good. And it's a conscious decision from the head based on principle. We could say that agape love is a one-way love or one-way outpouring of kindness and goodness. And while agape love doesn't expect anything in return, it doesn't mean we don't ultimately receive a benefit. As our characters are developed by practicing agape love, it helps us forgive, respect, and serve one another. Now, the ultimate example of agape love is, of course, expressed in John 3:16. "For God so loved," agapao, "loved the world that he gave his only begotten son." It was an outpouring of concern for a fallen, lost race, which was undeserving of his love. Let's compare that with philia. The word philia is a verb. The noun form is philia. We're much more familiar with the verb philia because it appears in the New Testament 25 times, as opposed to the noun philia just once. Briefly, these words philia and philia mean to be a friend to someone or to be fond of someone or something, that is, to have an affection for and have a personal attachment to it. We could say that it is a two-way feeling of deep affection, something felt in your heart. Philia, the noun, is translated friendship just the one time in James 4:4. Don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity against God? Of the 25 times that we see the verb philio, it's translated kiss 3 times, and these are all associated with Judas and his betrayal of Jesus. The remaining 22 times philio is translated as love, loved, lovest, and loveth in the King James. We're all familiar with the account in John 21, where Jesus asks Peter if he loves agapao him. And Peter responds, yes, Lord, you know that I philio love you. Jesus uses agape the first 2 times he asks the question and philio the 3rd time. Peter responds with philio all 3 times. So of these 25 times philio appears in the New Testament, 4 of them are in these couple of verses. And since agapao also appears in these verses, it gives us an opportunity to make a brief analysis and comparison of these 2 words, agapao and philio. In looking at this, we may see that Peter's response was amiss, maybe even disappointing to our Lord, perhaps even wrong. Why didn't Peter just say, yes, Lord, I agapao love you? So was Peter's answer amiss or wrong? I don't think so. Recall for a moment when Jesus raised Lazarus. Mary and Martha sent a message to Jesus concerning their brother, saying in John 11:3, Lord, the one that you philio love is sick. And in John 11:36, after Jesus wept over the death of Lazarus, the Jews said, see how he philio loved him. Those comments were from the perspective of the sisters and the Jews. It was filio love. It was a fond friendship, heartfelt. But from Jesus's perspective, it was agapao love. Verse 5 states that Jesus, agapao, loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So while the friends, disciples, and followers of Jesus felt filial love to Jesus and to each other, Jesus took it to another level. He had agape love towards them. So who was right? Well, I think they were both right. The followers did have a deep affection for Jesus, a fondness without compare. They loved him with kindness, warmth, and adoration. This was filial love. It was good. It was correct. They didn't understand how their relationships could be taken to agape love. I don't think it even crossed their minds. It just wouldn't have made any sense to them. It was above their level of thinking at that time. They didn't see the big picture yet, and therefore couldn't comprehend agape love this way. Jesus, on the other hand, had filial love towards them and agape love towards them, and not only them, but towards the whole world of mankind. He had to. After all, he would soon sacrifice his life for them. This is agape love in its full and true sense. So that brings us back to Peter and his response to the three questions. Like Martha and Mary, Peter had a deep, deep affection towards Jesus. Remember how he wept bitterly after his denials. This was truly from the heart. Peter loved Jesus, a filial love for him, and for him to agape love Jesus didn't really make sense. I think he was confused by the question, do you agapeo me? So he answered the only way he could. Yes, Lord, you know that I filio love you. It wasn't a wrong answer. It was the only answer Peter could give at that time, and Jesus knew it. So what was the point Jesus was trying to impress upon Peter? I think that Jesus was trying to teach him a much bigger lesson. Jesus knew that Peter filio loved him, and he acknowledged that the third time when he switched to the word filio, saying, Simon, son of John, do you filio love me? Peter was hurt, and I'm sure he recalled his three denials at that time. And he responded, Lord, you know all things. You know that I filio love you. So why did Jesus use agapao the first two times? The reason, and the bigger lesson, I think, was to tell Peter that while it was okay to have filio love towards Jesus, it wasn't enough. He needed and would have to develop agape love towards Jesus. This is what Jesus would require of Peter if he were to be a disciple of his. Peter didn't understand this at the time. He was, I think, confused by the question, agapeo. We can see this by his response using the word filio. But later, after Jesus was gone, off the scene, as it were, no longer physically present, Peter could ponder these words from Jesus. He would have missed Jesus and longed for him. And maybe it was then, without that physical presence, that Peter would come to realize from this lesson that he would need to develop agape love for Jesus. It was really an emphatic way for Jesus to make the point. So if that's the lesson for Peter, to develop an agape love, then what's the lesson for us? It's the same for us. If Peter was instructed to develop agape love, so we are to do the same. Just as in the scriptures at the beginning of these thoughts, where we were told to put on agape love and pursue agape love, these are not mere suggestions. These are directives to us, commandments. One additional point. Prior to Peter's denials, Peter said, Jesus, I will lay down my life for you. And Jesus told him, you will disown me three times. And later, Peter did deny Jesus. What was Peter lacking? Why did he deny Jesus? Peter had plenty of filial love for Jesus, but that wasn't enough. He needed something more. He needed agape love, a self-sacrificing love for Jesus. So when Peter said that he would sacrifice his life for Jesus, Jesus, with these three questions, was directly instructing Peter that what was really necessary for him to lay down his life, agape love, a sacrificing love. And Jesus was indirectly telling us that we would also need agape love. The pursuit of agape love is often likened to a race course with four quarter marks. This illustration gives us a good gauge as to where we are on this race course towards a perfect self-sacrificing agape love. These four quarter marks I'll briefly summarize. The first quarter mark is to love and appreciate God's love and to love righteousness. The second is to hate sin, practice righteousness, and love God's divine plan. The third is to love the brethren. And finally, the fourth quarter mark is to love our enemies, even if they hate you in return. This analogy of a race course provides us with a good measuring stick of our progress as we make this lifelong journey, but it doesn't give us a method of how we can get there. It's easy to say, I need to develop love, so that's what I'm going to do. Or I'm going to be more loving, and then I'll have more love. Or I'm just going to love everyone and hope that will get me to the finish line. That might be helpful for filial love because filial is a natural love. It's built in. We might say it comes to us automatically. But with agape love, that won't work. Since we are a fallen race, it's not something that we are born with. It's not something that we naturally possess and therefore must work to acquire it. We need a plan. We need a recipe. So let's begin with God. 1 Timothy 6:16 speaking about God says, who lives in unapproachable light? This light from God symbolizes eternal love and wisdom. The idea that he's living in the light means that there is no darkness anywhere near him. Darkness symbolizing evil and sin. In 1 John 4:8-16, we are told that God is love. Agape love. The very definition of God is agape love. He is the source of agape love. So he's surrounded by light and he is love. Now, how is Jesus described in comparison to God? We're told in Colossians 1:15 that the Son is the image of the invisible God. Jesus is so much like God that he is described as the image of God. In John 14, Jesus tells the apostles that if you really know me, you will know my Father. And Philip asks, show us the Father. To which Jesus replies in verse 9, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. And in Hebrews 1:3 from the King James, the element of light is used to compare the Son to God, who, being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person. Remember, God lives in an unapproachable light, and Jesus is the brightness of God's glory. So picture before your mind, God, who is love, agape love, is surrounded and enveloped in light. And that light and love is reflected through Jesus to us so that we can see God's agape love shining to us. Now, you all know that when you shine a beam of light through a prism, the refracting surfaces of that prism will separate white light into a full spectrum of colors. All these colors fan out, each color blending into the next, producing a seamless, seemingly endless array of colors. These colors are the components of that white light. And if we can imagine for a moment, if a bright, pure white light representing God's pure agape love were shown through a prism, the resulting dispersion of colors would represent the components of love. And it's those colors of agape love that we want to look at and draw some lessons that we can use. Now, I've titled my thoughts, The Recipe of Love. A recipe has a list of ingredients and directions to get to a certain outcome. So what are the ingredients of agape love, representing these colors from a prism? Well, finding this list of ingredients actually isn't that difficult. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 gives us this list. From the NIV, we read in the fourth verse, love is patient, love is kind. Those are the first two on our list. And this love is agape love, of course. Incidentally, there's 15 ingredients listed in verses 4 through 7. That's a lot. So I'm going to combine several of them in an attempt to make it slightly more manageable. And I'm going to rename some of them to make it a little simpler. So patience is the first ingredient of agape love in 1 Corinthians 13:4. Just as God is love, so love is patient. And isn't that so true? In everything God does, he is patient. We see that in his plan for mankind, patiently working out every detail. We certainly look forward to the kingdom, and we might pray that it will soon come. But it will come in God's appointed time. But I do appreciate those sentiments. God has been patiently developing his church for over 2,000 years, and he has allotted another 1,000 years for the world of mankind. Both of these demonstrate patience. Perfect patience is an element of God's perfect agape love. And in order for us to develop agape love, we must practice patience. Practicing patience means being able to wait without becoming angered or annoyed and without being anxious or worried. And here's a big one, without complaining. That sounds difficult, and it is. Practicing patience means that we will try to remain calm in all things, in all circumstances, to everyone, all the time. Even when someone has harmed or wronged you, remain calm and in control and be kind in return for adversity. We've all faced delays of one sort or another. Sometimes we wonder, why me? Or why now? Remember that everyone has weaknesses and infirmities. Always be tolerant and don't respond with even the slightest bit of anger or disrespect. If you've ever driven a car, as most of us have, you know that you need patience. This is a big test for me. It seems like I'm always in a hurry. And if you've ever driven on Florida roads during the holidays, well, you know what I mean. We do love Florida, though. That's why we keep coming back during the holidays. But the point is that I know I have a lot of work to do on myself when it comes to patience. And in fact, all of these ingredients. And that's why I wanted to look at this subject. And now that I've looked at it, I need these things more than I thought. Patience begins at home. It extends to the brethren and continues to everyone, even our enemies. Sometimes we even need to be patient with ourselves. I just wish I could learn patience faster. Practicing patience requires us to be actively aware of our emotions all the time, every day. As we go about our daily activities and affairs, we can practice patience all the time. We don't have to look for a special test from God in order to grow more patient. We can and need to work on it all the time. And he will give us bigger tests when we need it. But we'll be prepared for them because we've been practicing patience daily on the small things. James 5, 7 through 11 gives us some good lessons in patience. Lessons from farmers, lessons from prophets, and from Job. And I'm just going to read a portion of it. It says, be patient, don't grumble against one another. Remember, God is showing patience with us as we work on our patience. And as we grow our patience, this will naturally lead us to kindness. Kindness is the second ingredient of agape love, also in 1 Corinthians 13, 4. Just as God is love, so love is kind. Kindness is a word that we all understand, but let's define it anyways. To be kind is to be friendly and considerate towards others. To be kind is to be helpful and caring, to show concern, to show thoughtfulness, and to be gentle, and sometimes just to be a good listener. To be kind is to be generous and have hospitality. It is goodness and sweetness. And we could go on and on. There's no shortage of synonyms for kindness. Now, it may seem like kindness comes from the heart, and it does. Kindness is easy, relatively speaking, when we show it towards our family, our loved ones, our friends, neighbors, and acquaintances. We do this because we expect or at least hope for kindness in return from them. That's good, even very good. But that is kindness with the filio type of love. And we want to go beyond that. We want to go beyond filial love to agape love from the head. Practicing kindness requires us to show kindness to our adversaries and enemies as well. In all things, in all circumstances, to everyone, all the time. This kind of kindness is more difficult. We have to think. We have to actively control our natural tendencies. It's love that comes from the head, agape love. There's also another group that falls in between friends and enemies. It's someone that we don't know and may never see again. We usually refer to them as a stranger, an outsider, or a passerby. Have you ever had someone help you or show an act of random kindness toward you that you didn't expect at all? And come away from that experience thinking, wow, they didn't need to do that. I may never see them again. They sacrificed for me. That's the kind of kindness that we want to practice, even when it's inconvenient. And when we practice kindness, we want to do it with sincerity and warmth. It's voluntary, not expecting anything in return. As it is with practicing patience, practicing kindness requires us to control our emotions. Remember that God is showing kindness to us. Let us show kindness to others. Simply put, kindness delights in making others happy. Now, we're going to go through the rest of these ingredients much more quickly. But remember that if we diligently practice the first two on our list, patience and kindness, gaining control of the others will be easier, relatively speaking. But we still need to work on these as well. The third ingredient is, in verse 4 also, is love is not envious. Envy is a desire or lusting for another person's things or their good fortune, and results in feelings of resentment or discontent or unhappiness. Instead, we should be happy for them. And remember that God is giving us exactly what we need. Paul says in Philippians 4:11, I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. So the lesson for us is to control these feelings and practice contentment. The next two in verse 4, I'd like to combine. It says, it does not boast, it is not proud. Or we could say, it is humble. So ingredient number 4 is, love is humble. Proverbs 11:2 says, when pride comes, then comes disgrace. But with humility comes wisdom. Practicing humility means practicing mindfulness towards others, listening to others, being grateful for your situation instead of being proud of your situation. Put others before you. Ask for help when you need it. And don't forget to say thank you. For the fifth ingredient, the beginning of and end of verse 5 says, it says, it does not dishonor others and it keeps no record of wrongs. And I'll call these items love honors others. To honor others means that we must be polite and courteous to everyone all the time. It doesn't say bad things about someone, especially behind their back, or keep a record of their wrongs against us, or hold grudges. It doesn't gossip. Here's what honor does. It always respects others. It listens and encourages. It overlooks weaknesses and mistakes and shows compassion. It is understanding and it gives the benefit of the doubt. It's polite and courteous with the proper tone. That's my problem very often. I'll get wound up in conversation and my tone of speaking isn't proper. I need to work on that. Also, honor is quick to forgive. So practice these things. Ingredient number 6, also in verse 5, says, it is not self-seeking. So we have love is unselfish. Philippians 2, 3 and 4 sums this up. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain glory. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In other words, practicing unselfishness means putting others before you. Be benevolent. Be charitable. Assume others' good intentions and pray for others. Number 7 on our list of ingredients, it is not easily angered. I'll label this one, love is good-tempered. Not easily angered includes not easily irritated or upset. Practicing to be good-tempered means that we are trying to be calm under adverse circumstances and accepting of our trials and testings. Being good-tempered means being friendly in all things to everyone all the time. For ingredient number 8, verse 6 says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. I'd like to name this, love is honest. What I think this means is to live honestly, to live an honest life. Don't cheat others. Don't take advantage of others. Don't participate or get caught up with others doing unethical things or participating in gossip. Avoid wrongdoing. These things we could consider delighting in evil, but rather live upright, true, and pure. Be holy with good intentions. This would be rejoicing with the truth. This would be practicing honesty. There's a lot in this 8th ingredient. Love is honest. Consider these things carefully. In verse 7, there are 4 items listed. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And I'm going to make 2 groups. Can you see that? That's a little different type. I like the King James rendering at the beginning of this verse. So we have ingredient number 9. Love bears all things and trusts. And ingredient number 10, love hopes and perseveres. The last 2 ingredients in this recipe, I'd also like to separate from the first 8 on this list. And this is just a suggestion. The first 8 give us instructions on how we can and should develop agape love towards our fellow men and women here on planet Earth. But is it enough to only develop agape love towards mankind? I don't think so. Agape love requires even more. It also requires us to actively demonstrate our love towards God. And perhaps that's where these final 2 ingredients come into play. Agape love toward God. So number 9 is love bears all things and trusts. We know that all our affairs are guided and controlled by God to the benefit of our eternal welfare. And since we know this, our willingness to bear all these things from God shows our agape love to Him. It is agape love because it goes against our natural tendencies to avoid these trials and testings, but rather we joyfully accept them because we know that it's for our development. Romans 8:28. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love Him. Agapao love. And we fully trust God in all things. 1 Timothy 4:10 from the King James. We both labor and suffer reproach because we trust in the living God. So when we bear all things and trust God, we show our love to Him. And number 10 is love hopes and perseveres. We have a future hope. God has given us a peek into His future plans, a preview, if you will. It's a sure hope for us. This hope of God's promise gives us perseverance to con- to continue on, and a never give up mindset. The King James says it endures all things. Love toward God is shown in perseverance, the perseverance we demonstrate because of the hope that we have. And in 1 Corinthians 13:8, this list of ingredients is followed by the statement, love never fails. Agape love never fails. So if you do these things, if you practice these things, your agape love that you develop will never fail you. In Matthew 22:36, one of the Pharisees asked Jesus, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" To which Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." These two things, agapao, your God, and agapao, your neighbor. These first eight elements, we want to practice agapao towards our neighbors. And the last two elements, we show our agapao toward God. So that brings us back to our original question back at the beginning. How do we put on love? And how do we pursue love? The answer is by practicing these elements of agape love to everyone, every day, little by little. You've heard the saying, sow an action and you will reap a character. Well, that's true. What we want to sow is an action of these ingredients of love, and you will reap a character of agape love. And may the Lord add his blessing.